Hey everybody, it's Michael here, and you're listening to the Good E-Reader Radio Show. Everybody, it's the Good E-Reader Radio Show. The date is October 29th, 2012. Lots of news to talk about today. There's the Penguin merger talks that are happening, which was basically just confirmed by Penguin and Random House. And so the two sides will be merging and creating a publishing conglomerate, if you will. Strong negotiating powers with Amazon. A lot more to that story that we'll talk about today. Also, the Microsoft Surface and Windows 8 came out, along with plenty of e-reader apps that have come out to the platform. So we're going to tell you which ones get our seal of approval, and you'll get a strong sense of with the Surface and ergo Windows 8, what it's basically all about, as well as all the daily news. So the big story, I guess, that's happened is surrounding Penguin. You know, not only have they released their fiscal quarterly results, which basically are saying that ebook sales are up roughly about 35% in the company from the third quarter last year, they're seeing monumental growth. And in order to facilitate even greater growth, what's basically happened is Penguin and Random House are going to be merging companies. And so Pearson, who owns Penguin, will get about 47% of the new company, while the parent company of Random House will have 53%. So basically the story is that there's a new CEO with Penguin, and they kind of wanted to sell off some of the assets in the company. They weren't too keen with maintaining the publishing division. And so it would make sense that this is the most opportune time to either de-invest themselves, sell it off completely. And rumors were swirling over the weekend and News Corp and Rupert Murdoch had put in a bid from the company. But it pretty well makes sense that two of the big six publishers, that they were the ones who basically banded together to form this new initiative. Now, according to an email that was sent out today, they're basically telling company, the people who work for them to reassure them that something like, you know, the whole merger is, you know, months away. It's business as usual. You know, in the meantime, there's really no mention on how employees will be infected and if they will be still employed as the sort of a merger goes on. But this, you know, poses an interesting circumstance that you have two huge companies, they do self-publishing, they have, roughly about 30 different imprints between the two, which we've basically documented every imprint. So it goes from like fantasy, sci-fi, romance, and a ton of others. And it'll be very interesting to see, you know, going into 2013, most likely about by the second quarter, will anything really happen? You know, with mergers with huge companies, it often takes, you know, 6 months to a year for anything to be formally completed. We'd like to hear your thoughts on this deal. You can comment on this radio show, on the post, on our website at goodyreader.com. If you are an author, if you're involved in the publishing industry, we'd like to see how you might be affected by this change. And if you're an indie author that currently has signed a deal with Penguin or Random House, and you're wondering, you know, how's this going to affect your royalties and things like that, we'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Aside from Penguin, there is also lots of news, you know, regarding Microsoft Surface Tablet and Windows 8. Now, we had the Surface in our labs, and we put out a series of videos, unboxings, reviews, and we have more video coming up this week to kind of give you our impressions after a solid 5 or 6 days of actually using the tablet. Windows 8 paradigm shift. It's completely unlike anything that you've ever experienced before. I'm going to talk about Windows 8 in relation to the Microsoft Surface, because most people have thought or they've already upgraded their PC to Windows 8. If you're an early adapter with a penache for pain, you might have purchased the Surface tablet. Hardware-wise, it's pretty spectacular. It pretty well has one of the coolest designs that I've ever seen in tablets. Rumor has it that there was almost 200 custom parts that were used just for the design of it. So everything from the sides to like the back of it and all the internals, very slick. It's probably one of the most unique tablets I've ever seen before. And it was the first tablet basically that was going to be the trailblazer for Windows 8. Resolution's pretty good. You have 1366 by 768 with a true 16.9 aspect ratio, and this is mainly because of the 10.6 inch screen. So it's almost a full inch larger than the iPad, but it doesn't have the type of resolution, but you probably will get a better video experience with the Surface. And we're going to, like I said, make a video where we're going to pretty well document high quality HD with Netflix, with movies that we've sideloaded onto it ourselves, and various other services. So we're going to compare it and show it to you, and then we'll show it head to head with like the iPad and other Android tablets. There's a quad core NVIDIA ARM processor and 2 gigs of RAM that are underneath the hood, and there's twin cameras too. There's enough storage with 32 or 60 gigabyte variant that you could purchase, but it does have SD card support. You could put up to about 128 gig card in there, and then because it has a USB 2.0 port, you can hook up your flash drives, so you know, load documents or student files or whatever you carry on your thing, everything from like GIFs to, you know, or whatever. So You can do that, but you could also have like a, you know, a 2 terabyte portable USB drive and plug it into there for like all of your media and stuff like that, so you can copy things to and fro. The interface is pretty unique. It's Metro, and I mean, anybody listening to the show has probably either read a review of the Microsoft Surface or they've seen beta pictures and beta reviews. You know, Windows 8 has been around in various iterations for almost the whole year, so people have posted a lot of pictures online. My impressions is I kind of dig the live tiles. I like the fact that I could just like drag around and, you know, minimize specific things that maybe don't have like a slideshow and keep the ones that I do. I pretty well deleted most of the default Bing things. I kept Bing News, Bing Maps, Bing Finance, but it comes with a ton of native applications. And I think the native applications on Microsoft's wrote themselves are probably the highest quality ones that are available for the Surface tablet. So anything that's like preloaded on it actually runs and functions really well. There's no errors, there's no bugs. Right when you take your Surface out of the box and connect it up to, you know, Wi-Fi, or one other thing I'd probably recommend is a wireless hotspot, so you can actually, you know, use 3G, 4G, LTE, like on the go. That's a story for another day, but the Bing Natives apps are tight, and the other apps available in the App Store, fairly lackluster. To tell you the truth, I was a bit disappointed in the quality of apps. I mean, you do have, like, for reading, apps from, like, Kobo, Amazon, No put out an app today. You have Zinio, Comixology, a ton of different apps that anybody listening to this show is probably uses on a daily basis or have used at one point or another. And in a lot of cases, they're crashing. With the Kobo app, there's like a stock thing in place where normally with Kobo apps, like for iOS or Android, they have the ability where you can do a long press, you can highlight a word, look it up in the dictionary, make a note, annotation, and so on. With the Windows app, it's you press down and you see this like physical box appear and nothing really happens. One of the funniest things that we've encountered was with the Comixology app, and it's documented in our review video that you could watch at youtube.com/goodereader, and it's on the front page for that. But you could infinitely pinch and zoom. You know that with like a lot of touchscreen tablets, you can pinch and zoom comics, so that allows you to isolate specific frames. If you don't like to use the guided view technology that just zooms in on a particular frame, you kind of want to just pinch and zoom and just scroll, you know, to and fro. You could perpetually zoom, so we like zoomed in basically infinitely into like the pixels of pixels, and it was very interesting that there was basically no limits. But it did create some buggy circumstances where if you're zoomed in at all, you can't actually turn pages in the comic. You have to totally zoom out and then swipe. Magazines were a redeeming factor with Zinio. We did have some localization bugs, so we couldn't actually purchase anything. Even though that we logged into our account and we tried to take out new subscriptions for content, anything that had a price basically said this is not available in your region. So it's a small geolocation bug with Zinio. I mean, that's the story with almost all the apps that we tested. The only thing that seemed to work pretty well were actually the games. So Cut the Rope, Angry Birds, and so on. Games that have basically been around on every single platform in the planet. So those guys have their stuff together. With a lot of the e-reader and comic book apps, Windows 8 was sort of like just testing the waters. It was the first time they've ever really made apps for that sort of platform. So needless to say, there is a lot of bugs with it, but we hope that in time, not only will the bugs be worked out, but a lot of new content will be added. Basically, in the 24 hours between when the Surface was supposed to be released, there was an influx of over 2,000 apps added. So there's all sorts of new apps being added, but there's kind of not necessarily a lack of quality control, but just like a lack of standards. My thoughts is that it's a fresh, you know, operating system. If you develop with iOS or Android, if you've ever made an app or if you're involved with programming, if you have any questions, you Google them. You go into an IRC chat room, you chat with other developers. With Windows 8, because it's just so new, just the, you know, you can't really Google common questions if you're developing an app, because just like the resources aren't there, the forum posts aren't there. There hasn't been like a lot of discussion about it. Obviously, that'll change in 6 months to about a year. But I would probably not really recommend a Surface RT tablet right now. I mean, it's a really cool tablet. The hardware is pretty awesome. But I mean, there's a lack of 3G. There's a lack of a SIM card. Windows is pretty well like a productivity type of operating system. And it's hard to be productive when you can't really be mobile unless you have like a hotspot and so on. But you know, even for me, I mean, I have a hotspot that I use in Vancouver, but I travel a lot. You know, CES, go to Taiwan for Computex, New York, California for product launches, and all over the place to different publishing events. Next year we'll be in Frankfurt for the Frankfurt Book Fair, London for the London Book Fair, and you know, various other big international events. And I can't use those hotspots while roaming unless I'm going to be paying like a crazy high fee, and I don't want to have to buy a portable hotspot for every different city or country that I'm in. I mean, that's kind of foolhardy. But there's a lot of other people like me too that are traveling with their business. They're never really in the same, you know, area code for too long. And so not being able to have any mobile connectivity other than just Wi-Fi really limits how productive you'd be. So I'm kind of interested to see how other Windows-based tablets will perform in that regard. I would probably say bypass the Surface RT and go with the Surface Pro that's going to be launching next year. The big distinction between the two is the Surface can only run the new Metro-style apps. You can't run any type of legacy apps that you would run, say, on your PC. The Surface Pro will sort of have your traditional Windows operating system, so you'd be able to go to your standard desktop, you'd be able to, you know, do wallpapers and run all your favorite applications like Photoshop or Dreamweaver or any of your, you know, your programs. I mean, Windows has been long enough that there's a ton of programs for everything out there. Surface RT can't run any of those, but the Surface Pro can. So with the Surface Pro, you get the best of both worlds. You get the Metro style interface with all the crazy new apps, all the cool functionality, and you could still run all of your legacy stuff too. So I'd probably say, since that's coming out, you know, early next year, by that time, the app ecosystem for Windows 8 should already be established. There should be like a higher quality of apps available, but the apps should be by that time hopefully polished and pretty well bug free. So you want my advice, wait for the Surface Pro. I know it's tempting to be an early adopter and, you know, everybody's talking about the Surface tablet. It must be awesome. But really, the hardware is pretty good, but the software is pretty abysmal. So I would probably give that one a miss. We wrote actually a pretty cool article today that's on our front page that you may want to check out. It's all about the history of ebooks in Japan, as well as e-readers. So we talk about the early formation of the industry with Sharp, with Toshiba, with Sony, and the first e-readers that they released in the market, how the market responded, as well as the content distribution systems that they put in place. Long story short, it's been a tumultuous journey, you know, to say the least. It really took a lot for the digital publishing sector in Japan to come around to the notion of ebooks. Up until about this year, when Amazon and Kobo entered the market, there was really no standardized ebook format. You had PDFs, you had LRFs, you had you had all sorts of different formats these companies had developed. And so if you're a digital publisher, it's like, oh great, I want to publish for Sharp, but I have to convert my ebooks to this format, or I want to do stuff with Sony, but I have to do stuff in this format. And but everyone buys manga, and manga is only really good in PDFs, but you can't change the size of the text. Let's just continue to pump out paperbacks and sell them in stores. Now that EPUB 3's come out, it's really allowed Amazon and Kobo and other companies to start being able to render complex Japanese characters. So if you have an e-reader, if you have a tablet, if you have an iPad or whatnot, you can actually change the size of the font. You can pinch and zoom a lot more effectively. You could isolate frame by frame if you're doing graphic novels. The Kindle has their own proprietary comic book technology that allows you to basically... it's sort of the equivalent of the Comixology guided view pane, where you kind of, the one little frame becomes the full image on the reader. So it becomes like a lot easier to digest, and you're not always having to pinch and zoom. So it's a good article, and it kind of chronicalizes the evolution of the industry and how it's really changed over the years since about 2006 or so is sort of in our timeline when we first start talking about it. So pretty interesting stuff. Speaking of interesting stuff, Barnes & Noble today launched their Nook e-reader in the UK. So this is the Nook Simple Touch and a Nook Simple Touch with Glowlight. It'll be sold at a myriad of companies, including John Lewis, Argos, ASDA, Sainsbury's, Dixon's, Blackwell's, Foyles, and others. The Nook HD and the Nook HD Plus, which is Barnes & Noble's new tablets, they're not really even out yet stateside, but they will be out around November the 6th. You can expect a UK launch around that time, but I would probably say a few weeks later. UK residents will not be able to participate in Barnes & Noble's new video service that they unveiled for US customers who purchased this tablet, but all things will probably change in time. With the e-readers that they launched, their website at nook.co.uk went live, so you can purchase ebooks from that and they'll be synced to your device. You can purchase up to about 2.5 million books. These include many of the UK's top best sellers, and within the coming weeks you'll be able to purchase newspapers and magazine titles as well. Good Housekeeping, Marie Claire, Men's Health, Cosmo, The Independent, and so on. This is cool. This is the first time that Barnes & Noble has really expanded outside of the U.S., and so it finally gives them a platform to expand into other markets. And the Barnes & Noble CEO at the last investors call, this was roughly about 2 or 3 weeks ago, he basically said that they want to expand into 9 different markets by mid-2013. So basically it starts in the U.K. You can expect France, Germany, Spain, and all the companies around there, like the Netherlands, all the same companies that are sort of like the platforms for growth that almost every other big e-reader company, Amazon and Kobo, they've kind of followed the same thing. They went into the UK first, and then they went to Germany, and then kind of spread all over Western Europe. So that's kind of like the way that they're going to be facilitating growth. If you've been reading our website lately, you've probably noticed crap ton of videos that we've put out. A lot of devices all came out at the same time. The Kindle Paperwhite, the Kobo Glow, the Kobo Mini, the fourth generation Kindle, the Amazon Kindle Fire HD, the original Kindle Fire but with updated specs, the Kindle 4 with updated specs. And so we've been reviewing all of these, writing reviews, but we've also been comparing all these e-readers against each other just to be able to give you a sense on what exactly these two, what exactly what they bring to the table. E-readers are fundamentally different. You know, a Kobo e-reader is very different than a Sony e-reader, and an Amazon reader is definitely different than, say, a Barnes & Noble or a Kobo e-reader, but they have a lot of commonality factors. I mean, they're portable e-readers designed to read books. The software experience and the user experience often is very different from platform to platform. The big selling point and the big hyping factor that everyone has to be aware of is the advent of glow light, front light technology. Everyone's used to cell phones. Everyone's used to tablets. The light emits from behind the screen. With these front-lit e-readers, it's actually built into the bottom of the bezel, and the light's evenly distributed across the screen. So you don't have light glaring in your eyes. The screen somehow is illuminated by anywhere between 4 and 8 LEDs that are going from the bottom of the screen and projecting light upwards. So for longer reading sessions, it definitely is way easier on the eyes. And this technologies evident on the Kindle Paperwhite, the Kobo Glow, and the Barnes & Noble Simple Touch Reader with Glow Light. And Barnes & Noble was the first company to basically develop this technology. And because of their relationship with E-Ink for putting out Nooks all these years, they had an exclusive sort of arrangement. We're saying basically, you know, we're going to have this for about 6 to 7 months, just us, and then you can license it to other companies. As soon as that date expired, Kobo and Amazon were able to use the new technology in their e-readers with E-Ink's blessing. So we've compared everything. Kobo Glow against the Sony PRS-T2, Kindle Paperwhite against the Kobo Glow, and all sorts of other stuff. So again, if you've been reading our blog a lot, you probably have noticed that ton of videos we've put up lately. So you can watch all our videos as well as all of our past videos, and some of our early ones are quite awful. I suggest you check out our earliest videos and then check out our latest videos just to track our evolution since we started basically filming e-readers, I think, early 2009 when they first started gaining some traction in the U.S., There's obviously, when it comes to e-reader and digital publishing news, there's so much coming out on a daily basis that most people find it's hard to, you know, keep up with the industry. If you are invested or in an ebook, digital publishing, e-reader industry, or if you just love the tech, make sure to check out our website. We publish anywhere between 8 and 10 articles almost every single day. We pretty well cover the most essential stories that track the web. We also do a ton of ebook reviews, so if you're interested in the latest and greatest of ebooks, we pretty well review most of the popular ones, as well as a lot of the fringe ones by some of our indie author friends. So you might want to check out goodyreader.com and make it your online destination for all of the latest news. It's completely free. Speaking of free, you might want to enter our contest to win a Kobo Mini e-reader. The contest draw is happening very, very soon. We're doing the draw date on October the 31st, and to enter, we have something on our front page, and you can do a search in the search box for Win a Kobo Mini, and we have a picture of about 8 different e-readers, and you have to tell us what e-readers are in the pictures, and we tried to make it as hard as we can. We have a wide array of product offerings, so if you have a discerning eye and you want to win a Kobo Mini, you might want to check that out. A little closer to home, obviously, most of the Goody Reader team is based in Vancouver, British Columbia. This is sort of where we have our offices and where we do the majority of our, you know, day-to-day work. And then, of course, we're always in the field. So we have a story here that's applicable not only to BC, but Canada in general. British Columbia has mandated an open e-textbook policy for post-secondary students. What this really means is first and second year students studying at colleges and universities will have thousands of books available. And this is up to about 200,000 BC students. And this is under the Families First agenda. What this does is this basically gives you all of the textbooks that you would use in your first and second years in digital form. And it's free. So instead of having to purchase $900 to $1,500 worth of books for a particular semester, you could get them for free, but only if you have an e-reader or a tablet. And so a lot of these universities, especially in Vancouver, currently do business with our satellite company, Shopee Readers. And so UBC, SFU, VCC, and a ton of other schools in Vancouver currently get e-readers and tablets from us and sell them in their bookstores, libraries, and so on. And so what this means is that students can pick up these devices and actually get free e-books from the government. And this is sort of like a cool new thing that they're going to be doing for the 2013 school year. So it's not available now, but you're looking mainly towards 2013 is when the project is set to go on, but it could be, you know, pushed back until January. They were kind of non-committal when we kind of had an interview with them. So Finally, let's talk about a few things. Sony Readers Book Club launched. So we kind of mentioned Sony at the top of the show in relation to their growth in Japan, but they are releasing a Book of the Month Club where readers can read and discuss books. They can participate in live chats via Facebook and Twitter. Every month they're going to be offering a new book, but they're not going to be giving any discounts for it, which sucks. The first book is due out November 28th, and this is Lani Taylor's Daughter of Smoke and Bone. The next book after that is Flight Behavior by Barbara Kingsolver, followed by The Black Box by Michael Connelly. Word has it that some authors may participate in this, but I think it's just Sony's way of trying to distinguish themselves, you know, in the industry a little bit more. Well, folks, I think that about wraps it up. The last thing that I want to say is Barnes & Noble and Microsoft, there's still no Barnes & Noble Nook app for Windows 8. This was promised to be a launch title, but they ran into mad problems in developing the app and having it like a fluid experience. You know, I talked about the woes of the Kindle and Kobo apps. So hopefully when Barnes & Noble does put out an app, it's fairly polished and there's really no problems with it at all. So that about wraps it up. And we have made it our mandate here at Goody Reader to do these radio shows a little bit more often. If you want us to do one every week, please comment and let us know. We don't want to be doing shows if nobody cares, but we care, and the e-reader industry cares as well. So give us your thoughts. Let us know how often or how not often you want us to do the show. And that about wraps it up. My name is Michael, and you're listening to the Good E-Reader Radio Show.